Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I am your host, James Jones, and it is December 21st, 2017. We are just days away from Christmas. And this is episode 550, the second. I am joined today by Mr. Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
And Mr. Guillaume Bayette.
Please, everyone, be careful if you're driving on icy roads in 2 days, like I'm probably going to be.
You know, they could just say, just don't do it. Like, just don't drive on icy roads. You can't be more careful than not.
So, but too late to buy tickets, plane tickets, and also some of us love our families.
You love them enough to put your life at risk?
Is James pitching the next David Cage game right now or not? I can't tell.
No, because I haven't put in a scenario where an attractive short-haired white woman gets sexually assaulted, so it's not a David Cage game yet.
It has to be a gratuitous shower scene, too. And I'm up for that.
Good God.
I mean, yeah, sure, why not? Especially when the actress you're basing it on doesn't know you're going to do it. That's a good touch. So, beyond that, we are not joined today by our human gratuitous shower scene, Mr. John Lindemann.
The whole gag was that he uses the bath.
I know. I can't. I had to take it as far as I could. He is finally back in his home following these really horrific fires out in California, forced him to evacuate. So he is taking today to get himself resettled and, you know, get his self back in order after being out of his home for at least a week, probably more than that, maybe closer to two. So everything sounds like he's in a pretty good place right now, so we're glad to hear it. But yeah, he took the day off, which... totally unacceptable, but that's okay. We'll get by without him. Which we pretty much do anyway, so it's fine. So, a couple bits of house cleaning to take care of before we get started into the episode next week. So this is the week of December 25th, which means we'd be releasing the episode on the following Sunday, which I don't have a calendar in front of me, so I can't tell you what day that would be. Hold on one second. I can facilitate this. It would be on December 31st. We will not be releasing an episode. Granted, you probably still have like 10 hours of telethon to get through, so you can go do that. We're just, you know, we're going to take that week off. We're going to actually spend time with our families, or intend to, but not, whatever. Whatever. We're just not going to record an episode. We'll be fine. But when we come back, we will be announcing our plans for the now donation-obligated second WiiWare retroactive. So if you have any games that you think should be under consideration for that retroactive, please send them in immediately to the RFN email alias, rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Right now, our working list, so the list we're going to be building our plans from, is the runner-ups from, well, not just the runner-up, is the non-winning candidates from the initial WiiWare retroactive poll. So get those suggestions to us immediately, because we'll be announcing it on the first episode in the new year, or at least announcing what our plans are, and we will go from there. But we have a normal episode to do this week, and Greg will be kicking off new business.
Sure.
With a couple games that we have been delaying talking about now for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, you know, it's I've been playing other stuff too, so it's not just you know, other people's games. It's indeed my games that have kind of shunted these into this lot. But yeah, so first of all, I'm going to talk a bit about Rive. I spoke about looking forward to that for a long time. You know, and so I did pick it up early, but then kind of just other games kind of got in the way. A little bit of me kind of really sinking my teeth into it straight away. But at this point, you know, I played through the campaign a couple of times, gone through all the stages, doing, you know, kind of brushing up the scores a little bit. Once I haven't done all the, you know, seen like all the different modes you can do, like speed runs and one credit and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I've played it a fair bit, considering obviously it's not the most extensive kind of game, you know, stage by stage, shoot 'em up as it is. But, you know, as expected, I've thoroughly enjoyed enjoyed it. I really, there's a number of things I like about it in terms of, you know, it's kind of both kind of its similarities to kind of conventional shooters and where it's different. You know, it's definitely got a little bit of a kind of Bangaio feel to it compared to what I was expecting in a way. Because there's not that many games that remind you of Bangaio. It's quite a strange thing. But he literally calls it out in the script, you know, so they're quite upfront about that, you know, and that's something I like because I've played both the DS game, Bangaio Spirits, and the original N64 game, which only came out in Japan. In that series, but the biggest difference, you know, with this, like I say, I mean, first of all, it kind of mixes up play styles in terms of there are some scrolling shooter stages, you know, there are some stages where it's a lot about platforming, you know, rather than just flying around. In fact, a lot of the stages that you know, have that kind of heavy kind of platform emphasis as well. So it does feel very much unique. But I guess the biggest component where it kind of reminds me of Bangaio is where, you know, you've got these enemies that are just kind of converging on you and you've got a special attack that's, you've got a really kind of you know, wide you know, kind of area of effect or something like that, and you kind of wait to the last possible moment to draw them all in and then pow, just kill them all in a massive score boosting kind of explosion, which, you know, in Bangaio would trigger slowdown. That, I mean, slowdown is too kind of a word. The game stops, you know, and then restarts at some point in the future as the missiles actually start to spread out. Whereas the thing with Rive is it is, you know, smooth and fast all the way through. You know, so it's got some of that kind of physical kind of feeling, you know, of enemy swarming you and stuff like that in a way that, you know, conventional, like a classic arcade shoot 'em ups don't, because they are very much, you know, you will die in one hit. So it's not really about enemy swarming you. It's more about, you know, a bunch of bullets flying around. This has got a much more physical kind of feel to it because, you know, you have a life bar. Especially if certain classes of enemies are just, they see you, they come for you straight away kind of thing, you know, and it's up to you to kind of fend them off a lot of the time and just kind of, you know, keeping that special attack in your back pocket until, you know, it's absolutely has to be used, and then, you know, blowing them all up at the same time is very, very satisfying. And, you know, certainly if you're going into score, you know, trying to brush up and improve your scores, that takes on a kind of secondary, you know, another level of significance because of things like the score multiplier and all that, mm-hmm. which actually has a bit in common with Sin and Punishment, for another Treasure reference. Sin and Punishment 2 specifically, that had a score multiplier that builds up as you kill stuff and then degrades if you get hit. The difference with this is the multiplier builds up as you kill things. So, you know, the score that you get from killing that thing becomes times 11, times 12, times 13 as you kill things, for instance. But if you get hit, it just goes away. In Sin and Punishment 2, it just, like, it went down, you know? It wasn't like, it literally, you know, it just goes down to one in this. So it's more binary in that way. So kind of these, getting on these hot streaks where you can just, you know, keep yourself from getting grazed by something and then manage to kill something just in time to keep the multiplier streak going and all that, can create huge swings in how big your score ends up being. As a result, because it is isn't as granular as something like Sin and Punishment 2 was, you know. So if you're playing for score with this, which, you know, I think if you get into it at all, I kind of feel like you might do, because you know, that really is kind of where the lasting appeal of the game is, in terms of it isn't especially long in the campaign form, even though, you know, for a shoot 'em up, I guess it's fairly chunky, you know. I mean, a lot of the time, what are they, like, five levels or whatever, you know? It's that's the kind of thing that it's referencing. Again, you know, among the other things it references is R-Type, and with Gradius, I mean, it literally has a section from Gradius with the two volcanoes spewing stuff, essentially.
And similar music, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's And isn't the Vic Viper in the background? I mean, it actually has a hell of a lot of references, this game, but it's I don't think it was generally as effective in that way as something like SteamWorld Dig 2. You know, it's the script, and I turned down the voice acting almost immediately. That is not something that I really want. Even if it was like flawlessly executed, it's not something I really want too much of in a game of this type. I mean, first of all, we're going to play a lot of it portably, and that will involve a lot of the time me having sound off altogether. So, I mean, there's that. But also just kind of, you know, you're trying to kind of get into a zone with this sometimes, you know, especially this whole, you know, if you get even grazed a little bit, it busts your score multiplier thing. Like, anything kind of, you know, you just kind of want to get the music and the sound effects and kind of lose yourself in it a little bit more than just, you know, if you are going to have sound on, that is, than having the voiceover. But yeah, I mean, the script is just... It's trying too hard, I think, is the biggest thing I took from it. You know, it just and I can relate as a person who generally tries too hard any time he opens his mouth. That's, you know, I understand their pain, but it is true that it is trying too hard. It's just too sort of dense with memes and references. And, you know, I mean, generally, you know, if something's going to reference Bangaya, I should be squarely on its side. And I suppose I am as a game, but not so much in its script and all that. But, you know, it's not even... With the voice acting off and all that, you do still get the text bump, the sort of appearing above the character or whatever, but it's not particularly obtrusive. It's a kind of fairly piffling kind of thing, that, and I've enjoyed it a whole hell of a lot, and I intend to keep sort of returning to it every now and again and improve some scores here or there where I feel like there's some scope for that, you know. So it's the kind of thing that probably, you know, is not going to be surging up the charts of the games that I've put ridiculous amounts of time into on Switch, which is already pretty high, you know, compared to certainly like Wii U, probably, just given the fully portable nature of it. But you know, not everything's about pouring 50 to 100 hours in. Which brings me nicely to a game that I have spent more than 100 hours in. And yeah,
oh no.
I am coming back to it now. And this is Splatoon 2. So specifically the Clan Blitz ranked and league battle mode that I have been enjoying. So this is kind of a big deal to me. I feel it's funny because... I don't wonder whether kind of the impact is the same for a lot of people. You know, Splatoon 2 has had a lot of updates already. You know, since July when it came out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a games as a service game, and they've been just shopping stuff out as it goes.
Yeah, so I wonder whether kind of people become kind of desensitized to it. But a new ranked battle mode for me is something quite different in its importance to a new stage or a returning stage or certainly new weapons, new gear.
So as somebody who doesn't play a lot of ranked battle, can you give me kind of a succinct description of Clan Blitz?
Well, now this is the main reference points for me is probably going to be other ranked modes. So hopefully,
well, what do you do? Let's start with
well,
that.
The biggest thing is you are each team's got a sort of a net. And you are going to collect clams that are lying around on the stage, and you are going to end up depositing them into the net to score, and whoever, you know, sort of scores 100 points first scores a knockout, or whoever has the most points at the end of the match wins, you know, just by that margin. So that's the basics of it, but there's a little bit more to it. And like I said, it kind of brings out some of the interesting ways that it is different from the ranked battle modes that we already had from the first one. If you remember, you know, that, like, so in the first one on Wii U, they added Rainmaker. Yeah, that was not something that was there as early as the other two, Splat Zones and Tower Control. But, you know, those three just came back for Splatoon 2. And so I've been kind of waiting for this for a while, thinking, you know, if they're going to add one, what's it going to be like and all that. And it's the most interesting thing about it is this is a ranked battle mode where you both teams could be scoring at the same time, hypothetically. You know, normally it's like, well, one team's in control of the tower at one time, one team's in control of the splat zones at one time, or one team has the Rainmaker, the physical weapon. But in this case, it is possible, you know, if nobody's defending, which, you know, can happen, as my experience with Rocket League has also demonstrated, that, you know, you both teams could be busy sort of scoring at each other's nets and, you know, not have any interest in actually stopping the bleeding back at home, as it were. But the biggest sort of dynamic that the game creates is that in order to begin scoring, you can't just pick up clams and then throw them in. You've got to collect at least 10 initially to form a football, an NFL style football, stuffed full of clams, which you then throw at the kind of basket, which then busts it open, and then it's for everybody else on the team to kind of pile in the loose clams that they've got. And so that's where the value of coordination of the team is really, really important, because it's one thing to collect enough clams to get a football. You know, weave your way there, whatever, depending on how diligently the opposition is defending, and then you open up their basket for scoring, and at first that scores you like 20 points straight away in itself. Later it does not, but the really big thing is how much do you cash in after that. And that's where, you know, ideally, you know, you're going to be highly coordinating, like, okay, somebody's going to go in, they're going to bust open the net, and then we're going to pile in with all the loose clams we've got. But of course, you know, in practice, even if you had really good communication, in practice it's probably all going to go to shit anyway, because Splatoon is just chaos and people exploding in paint, and you know I mean, the best laid plans soon gone out of the window in there anyway. But then you factor in, if you're just playing an anonymous kind of match or whatever, it's really quite difficult to get anything resembling coordination with it. But you know, it is definitely a fun kind of mode, in terms of you've got some of that Rainmaker style kind of component to it, in terms of the football. You know, once you have one, trying to get it to where it needs to go is a bit like Rainmaker, but it's more freeform than that, because with Rainmaker, whenever somebody dies and drops it, it spawns a shield, and then you have to wait, you know, and kind of pop that shield, or the opposition can pop it, all that kind of stuff. In this case, if you drop a football that's yours, first of all, the opposition can't even pick it up. It's yours, you know, I guess, because you kind of made it from clams somehow. So, like,
it's your clam ball.
They can't touch it. But the point, so if you die with a ball, like, the other team can't pick it up, but your teammates can, and keep advancing it to the goal. So that's, you know, kind of a situation where the opposition is obliged to kind of squat on it and wait for people to, you know, take the cheese and then blow them up quickly afterwards, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's got an interesting dynamic to it. And also it's possible to, like I said, not only like each team, you know, might have a ball of their own and they're scoring at the same time or something, but you can have multiple balls on the same team as well. So it can be, you know, it can be at times very much like, okay, one side tries to, you know, get a ball up the field, the other side stops them, then they go. Other times it's just completely crazy, and there's three balls. Oh, holy shit, they're all coming at once and they've all got ball. Like, you know, just like, what's happening? So it's been really fun kind of getting used to a new mode that does feel, obviously, like I said, it's got some similarities with Rainmaker and all that, but it's got a different kind of feel to any of the other ranked modes. And I did get the chance last week to play a bit of League, surprisingly, because League is what's cool about League, as I've said before, is you get to, you know, kind of team up with a friend beforehand, like in a pair. And then, you know, that you stick together, and then you'll get teamed up with other pairs, and then, you know, fight 4-on-4, and that you can hypothetically earn a place in a ranking based on, you know, how well you kind of do in terms of like winning percentage and all that gets you a score. But yeah, we've never done well enough to get anywhere near the rank positions in that, but it is still a lot of fun. And I was thinking, oh well, you know, this clan blitz mode has come around, but problem is, when it first came out, Splatoon 2, you had to advance to, I think, a B minus in rank battle before you could do League. So I was kind of like, well, I've only played it for a handful of rounds at this point in regular rank battle, so I'm assuming we won't be able to do League when a friend of mine, we had a couple of hours to play some multiplayer stuff, but we just thought we'd try it, and lo and behold, they've waived that restriction, which I think is kind of sensible at this point. Yeah, for a new mode, you want to encourage people to try it rather than having that 2 hour slot kind of go by the wayside because no one's built up. Few people have built up to the B ranking yet. And of course, now that there's four in rotation, you know, it's going to be less frequent, I guess, to some extent. Although I'm sure they, stirred it in more frequently early on to try and get people on board with it or whatever. But yeah, playing it in League was a whole other level of fun because, like I said, at least, with two people, I feel like in this, the amount of coordination you could do is kind of more significant than it is in the other games because, there might be other stuff going on. So two people by themselves can kind of, make some really meaningful contributions in terms of either defend, maybe we say, okay, we'll split up, I'll defend, you attack. So at least we know somebody's at home. Or it's like, okay, we're going to go for an orchestrated attack, somebody with a roller, paving the way while you give somebody with really high swim speed gear takes the football up there and all that. I'm really, really pleased that we've got a new rank battle to inject some new life into that, because that is my favorite way to play Splatoon 2, as I've said before, is League, when I get the chance to do it. But sometimes, especially depending on the sort of nature of the schedule that you're all subject to with the 2 hour time slots and stuff, you can end up getting the same things over and over when, like, you might prefer to play Rainmaker or whatever. That so having more variety and having something that stands out by itself like this, and the first new mode like this since Rainmaker back in the original Splatoon, I'm really pleased with it. It's kind of I was, as soon as they announced it, I was like, yeah, this is going to be cool, but I still kind of probably, at least to this point, has slightly exceeded my expectations, I'd say.
Yeah, I feel bad because, I mean, not bad like upset, but just like I enjoyed Splatoon a lot and I enjoyed Splatoon 2 a lot, but it never, maybe because there was actually shit to play this year, I just didn't go back to it.
Yeah, maybe the 25 new games per week has something to do
with it. Yeah, has been a problem for this. I mean, Guillaume laughs, but I think 22 games came out today.
Yep.
Which is ridiculous. Like, a ridiculous number. So it's, like, I feel like Splatoon 2 is a better product than I was being offered in Splatoon. But
oh, it is. And I mean, the big difference between Splatoon 2 and Splatoon for me is just the fact that you've got full portable play here. It makes it far more plausible that I'm going to dip into it for, an hour or two a week and keep doing that. Whereas with the original Splatoon, it was kind of the burst and then you fall off it a lot more.
Yeah.
So that like you said, with all the other games coming out and everything, portability, whatever, it's still pretty easy to fall off it. And I had, not all the way, but to a fair extent, it kind of shrank down to a sort of relatively minor trickle with all these other games, including games that are kind of competing for the same kind of enjoyment, like Rocket League. Obviously it's not exactly the same kind of game or anything, but it is,
but the same.
Yeah, it's offering you the same kind. Again, for me, the fun of teaming up with a friend and trying to at least achieve some level of coordination. I felt like this was something that it needed to give it a bit of shot in the arm, to keep me going for however much. But like I said, I could see myself making time you know, every week to just put an hour or two in with these modes, because that for me they're the highlight of the game. But I mean, there's Salmon Run, there's the regular Turf War stuff, there's Splatfest, but there's plenty of other stuff. But to me, that's the kind of apex of it.
Hey, ARMS is actually going through the same thing right now, where they just released another new stage, another new character, some more mode tweaks. Was it last month? Now they released that weird party mode thing.
Yeah, they started doing their own kind of party crash, which is like a little bit Splatfest-y, to say the least.
Yeah,
you know, with
an event.
Yeah, head-to-head, you know, characters kind of, you know, showdown thing.
And I think, like, I never even ended up buying that game, even though I was excited about it, because I knew I would fall off.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially because Splatoon 2 was, like, you know, a few weeks away.
Like 3 or 4 weeks off. Oh. Isn't it weird to be talking about not having time to keep up with Nintendo's games? And Nintendo releasing games as a service now that they've got, like, games coming out every month competing for your time? What a weird world we live in, huh? Greg, you have anything else you want to say about Blitz?
No. Like I said, it's been a very welcome addition, and you know, I'll keep playing it. And anything, you know, it's a really facile thing, but anything with a ball of football just sort of adds to the fun factor of it.
Is it a literal ass football?
Yeah, it's a big football. I mean, it looks like, you know, an NFL or college football. And also the fact is, like, the throw-in sort of mechanic of it, like when you go to throw to the basket, there is a sort of arc to it. You can miss. You can short arm it, which is hilarious, really, when it's like, you know, you're just surviving the Private Ryan style carnage to get to the basket, and then,
oh, jeez.
It drops short. It's like, oh, wow. Yeah, and then, of course, you immediately get splatted, and that's probably that. But, you know, it just adds to the comedy and the feeling of any amount of sporting cliches that you might want to inject into the conversation.
All just dropped.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, there is kind of a legitimate sort of overlap with football in this sense, in that it isn't just about, you know, kind of like in the NFL, you know, it's not just about moving the ball. It's about what you do when you get down there. Because it's all,
you drove, you know, 92 yards in the last 30 seconds and then threw 4 incompletions.
Or, you know, you get the touchdown, gets overturned, and then it bounces in the air and gets picked. Or, you know, in general, you know, with the NFL, sometimes not about as being prolific with yards as punching it in when you get down there. And that's a big component of this, because, like I said, it's all well and good popping their sort of net to be able to get clams it, but if your teammates aren't following up, it's right. Not it's going to be a very modest score. So, like I said, you might be dealing with a situation, and I've seen it sometimes from where opposing players have balls and they're not going, you know, they're holding off, they're sort of waiting for their teammates to accumulate more clams so that when they do make the big push, it's going to be, you know, up for a monster score. But of course there is a danger to that, which is, you know, if they end up getting shot and those balls just sit there unused and eventually blink out, you've wasted your time. So it, yeah, there's a risk reward factor there, but you know, that is or if so, maybe a team that only makes one successful incursion is just going to win because they filled their boots when they got there. It's a cool concept. I like it. It's more granular and sort of more chaotic than the others.
Do you feel like in general your experience has been that players who get in there seem to know what the hell they're doing?
Early on, it was I really wondered whether people knew what was happening. But then again, you do wonder whether are they like planning some sort of super crazy sort of special incursion plan? Like, is this
Kelly's Heroes?
There's a paranoia factor of like they, especially because I didn't like play the mode the first day it was up or anything, because I missed it again because of the windows with it. And
right,
it's kind of easy to do that. So you know, it'd been out for a couple of days. I'm kind of like, is there something I miss it, you know? But other times you are, like I said, sometimes people are hesitating with the ball or whatever, like throwing it when they, yeah, it seems like, do they know the rules? but especially with like the whole league thing, like not requiring that people have played up to B, Like, yeah, maybe there was people in there that didn't have a bloody clue what they were doing. I don't know. No. Maybe I was one of them. I mean, let's not kid ourselves.
My Clam Blitz experience, not Clam Blitz, my Salmon Run experience has definitely been I would drop into a game and realize that, like, oh no, no one on my team knows what they're doing. This is a disaster waiting to happen. And you would just see, like, somebody immediately run into the water and implode. Like, well, we're down one.
And then you're just tempted to do the same thing, presumably.
Just like, well, let's just get this over with. This is going to be a disaster. Let's just wrap this up now. But yeah, this mode sounds especially complicated.
Yeah, it isn't as straightforward to describe. Like, is it because of the fact that it's not as kind of singular as the others? I feel like might take you some more adapted to. But you know, God, if you could get like a reliable party of four people together and actually be, you know, communicating with them and coordinating this stuff and all that, it must just be an absolute hoot. I mean, really must be.
I bet.
I can manage two, and that's pretty damn fun.
Cool. Wow. I might need to get back in there because I never got my ranked mode up very high, but now that I don't need to worry about it, you know, maybe I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I don't know whether they're going to reinstate that at some point, but I doubt it. I feel like we've kind of crossed the Rubicon here.
Yeah. All right. Well, Guillaume.
Yes. So all week, I've been on vacation, and I don't usually do this, but like I was taking a staycation by myself.
He's not shaved in 3 weeks.
Yeah, basically.
He's barely wearing a shirt. I say barely because it's just like rags that have been tattered in the whole week he's been on his own.
That's usually how I go to work, though. With the
Have you showered in the last 7 days, Guillaume?
They're more infrequent, but anyway,
well, that's fair. Yeah.
So I had been looking forward to doing some chores around the apartment and also, digging into an RPG on consoles, because I thought like, well, this is going to be perfect. I'm going to have like all day to myself. I'm going to be able to, you know, not take the TV away from anyone. And, maybe I can make a serious dent into one of these long, RPGs that have been kind of intimidating and that kind of weigh down on me. You know, I keep talking about my backlog, and that's part of it. And so I started Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne on the PlayStation 3. So I downloaded it. It's a PS2 classic on the system, on PSN. And I must have bought that when it was on sale for like $2.50 at some point. So, you know, probably got it on a deal back in the day when I was looking at my budget only in terms of money and not time. And so finally I got around to playing it. And, you know, I liked Shin Megami Tensei 4 on the 3DS. And before that, I liked Persona 4 on the PlayStation 2. And both of those had kind of... I think that when Atlus made the move to PlayStation 2, to that generation, they made strides in making their games more accessible. And unfortunately, I think that Nocturne is kind of was not quite there yet. Like you can see that there in many ways it's very accessible. There's you know, it gives you lots of info, but anyway, I'll get back to that later, I guess. So in Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne, you're playing as a student, high school student. You go visit your teacher, I guess, who's at the hospital. Maybe she's sick. It's not really clear from the actual dialogue in the game, but from the FAQ that I read, apparently that's the story. And so you go there with two of your classmates, and once you get to the hospital after meeting some people and reading some stuff about like a death cult that wants to bring about the end of the world, nothing less. You go to the hospital, and it turns out it's pretty much empty outside of you and your friends. And so you go set out to look for your teacher. And while you're in the hospital, turns out that the hospital is owned by this cult. And while you're in the hospital, you're kind of protected from the end of the world that's happening right outside.
I feel like a death cult owning a hospital is a bit of a contradiction in mission.
Yeah,
and you should really
sure.
try to hold to your mission statement. Like, we embrace death, but we're going to go ahead and get that appendix out while we're here.
Yeah, I've got no idea. Like, the thing is, the Shin Megami Tensei series takes place in Tokyo and uses, you know, actual Tokyo geography and stuff like that. So I think that the hospital is in Shinjuku. And maybe it's a particularly creepy hospital. I don't know. Maybe.
I would imagine the hospital is not real, because then they'd get sued.
Yeah, well, that's yeah, probably. So anyway, yeah, it's pretty strange, but it does make for kind of you know, an excuse, I guess, for having kind of blood smeared on the walls. It seems like it's not a very good hospital, as you would expect from it being owned by a death cult. But anyway, the end of the world happens, and you're safe inside the hospital. And meanwhile, outside, Tokyo kind of gets folded unto itself, Inception style, and everyone dies. And you can sometimes meet kind of spirits of people who are kind of confused about what's happening, and who are like, "Oh shit, you're a demon!" And in fact, yes. During all this, you've been turned into a demon. You get some nice tight tats, as one NPC puts it, and you've also got a horn sticking out of the back of your neck, and that's pretty much the only indication that, you know, something has changed with you. But other than that, you're like you're running around shirtless, and you look pretty much human, but I guess you're a demon. And so from there, you get basically the Shin Megami Tensei gameplay of meeting demons and sometimes befriending them, you know, getting them on your team, and fighting with them in turn-based battles. And then, you know, like there's the whole thing about kind of fusing demons together to get more powerful demons. And, you know, like it's I've played a game or several games based on this template before, you know, like more recently, Persona 5, but also before that, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, and etc. Like, I've played this kind of game before. And so I was expecting it to be, since Nocturne is really kind of one of the bigger, earlier hits that Atlus had in this series in North America, and one of the earlier games that came out here, where like they made it more accessible for everyone. I was hoping to kind of get through this game pretty frictionlessly, but unfortunately, there's a lot of little nagging things that made me kind of lose interest in playing more. First of all, the game has a very slow start. Like, what I've just told you takes probably like 4 hours to happen actually in the game. And from there, like, you're kind of left not really without any kind of secondary characters of notes. Like, your friends kind of disappear off the map, and every NPC that you talk to is basically a town folk NPC from, you know, a Final Fantasy game. Like, they say one thing, and they say it every time that you talk to them. And the plot doesn't really move forward. You're basically chasing this guy, I think, around. That gives you an excuse to go from to get out of the hospital and then to, you know, go to new areas. But the plot doesn't really move forward. And so at that point on Twitter, I asked, like, okay, I'm, you know, I'm not really feeling this. I'm about 5 hours in. Am I on the cusp of like suddenly the game kind of kicking into a different gear? And so Seren answered that, like, yeah, give it a couple more hours and more should happen. And so I did give it a couple more hours, and indeed the plot moved forward a little bit. Like, I was kind of, I met one of my pals, one of my classmates, who kind of gets his life sucked out of him by Loki, by Thor, actually,
as you do.
Yeah. And you know, like, some stuff happened. Like, I could see, like, there's this, I had to basically infiltrate this, this building that is where the a clan of demons who believe that might makes right, you know, where they've set up. So, you know, that was interesting, but it's kind of a setup that I've seen already in Shin Megami Tensei 4. And also from there, from that particular point in the game also kicks into high gear in terms of difficulty. And the one of the things that is maybe less refined in this iteration and this in this chapter, I don't know, in this game, is that the when you get a game over, it just keeps you, it kicks you back to the save games, the you know, to load your save. So that is a little bit annoying. And there's just like other little things that every time that I wanted to do, every time that I went into the menus, in the other Shin Megami Tensei games that I played, usually all the info is up front. You know, you go to use a skill. Well, it brings you to the your your party's page, and so you can select like the demon that you're going to use to cast healing spells on everyone, right? Then you see the portrait, and you see the skills, and you see the definition, like what the skills actually do, which is useful when the skills have or spells have names like Sukunda and Tarunda and Tarukaja or whatever. So like all the info is up front. So even though, you know, like these spells you end up using a lot, like there's a lot of these spells like Sukunda that I never really bothered learning exactly what they do, because I've never had to. Like, I've always had the description right there. Well, in Nocturne, unfortunately, usually, like in the screens where you actually use the spells, you can see the description. But when you're on a screen where you have to fuse demons and you have to select which spells you want to carry over, you cannot access the descriptions. And so, yeah, like that's just like, oh, crap, like that's a little bit annoying. I have to open up a FAQ. Like it's a little bit like doing homework right now. Or you know, like in some screens, you want to, you know, like you can't remember exactly which screen, but like there are screens where usually I can tell my demon only basically by their appearance. I need the portrait because otherwise I have to remember exactly what my Kodama is and distinguish it from my Sudama. And it's like there are like hundreds of demons in this game. I'm not going to learn all these names. Yeah, like in some screens, like you don't get the portrait, and that just messes me up. I have to like back out into the previous menu, go to like the status screen to see the portrait, and like, oh, okay, that's what a Kodama is. And so back again and go to the menu where, you know, I wanted to equip something or whatever. So all of that makes for a little bit of a tedious, you know, gameplay, and also the fact that I kept dying and having to reload past saves made it a little bit tedious. And I was like, you know what? I don't think that's how I want to spend a vacation. And so I just moved on. I decided that if I want to enjoy Shin Megami Tensei 5 when it comes out, maybe I should put this game aside and forget about it. Because I'm sure, you know, this game is, what, like 15 years old? And there have been improvements. Like, Shin Megami Tensei 4 was much, much more accessible, I find. And I really enjoyed it. And there's no doubt that 5 is going to be more accessible and more, you know, is going to have less friction than what I've just played. But the thing is, like, if I keep forcing myself to play this game, even though it might turn out that the story is really good and, you know, I think that it's going to turn out like Tokyo Mirage Sessions, where I kept playing even though I wasn't really feeling it, and I just kept resenting it more and more. And as a result, I, you know, like my opinion overall of the Shin Megami Tensei series as a whole kind of, you know, dipped a little bit. So yeah, like it's I don't know. Like, I'm looking forward to Shin Megami Tensei V, and I'm kind of thinking, like, maybe Atlus has been fond of bringing, of updating their games and remaking them for new hardware. So, you know, like, they brought Persona 4 to Vita. They've ported basically all of their DS games to the 3DS. They've remade them for 3DS.
At least a lot of the big ones, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of wondering, like, well, what's that for them to do? They're probably not going to port 3DS games to the Switch, but who knows? They might port...
They might absolutely do that.
It might be a little bit harder than porting just, like, their PlayStation games or remaking their PlayStation 2 games for the Switch.
You'd still need to make all those assets up into HD and stuff. I mean, granted, they just reuse assets from game to game anyway. So
yeah,
at some
exactly.
Point,
so they can just
remake. They can do that with the 3DS games too.
Sure, but I mean, like it would. But also, their sprites in the 3DS game, like they have to work on making them. The thing is, if they're already making those sprites for Shin Megami Tensei V, and we know they are, why not use that same engine and most of those same assets and just remake Nocturne? Anyway, like it's, you know, at this point, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Maybe I should wait until Shin Megami Tensei V comes out and, you know, I should play that and see if I enjoy it. And then maybe I can dream of a more accessible and better Shin Megami Tensei 3.
Yeah, maybe figure out if you just like this style of what Atlus offers. Because, I mean, although... at least in the West, a lot of these games have been slapped with the SMT label. They are quite different. And they sort of go after different experiences. Like the thing that you might like about one strand of Atlus's work, it may be present in all of them, but it's not what that particular game emphasizes.
Sure, but like we're talking, Nocturne is the main series. It's Shin Megami Tensei 3.
I know.
4 is the direct successor. There's like a lot of the same themes. It's just that 4, you know, was informed by a decade of, you know, game making. And they just made a lot of improvements to the formula. And they made it so that instead of... random encounters, you actually see the enemies on the map and you can get the advantage on them by you know, like hitting them with your sword before they attack you, and things like that. Like they, and you know, all the information is up front, it's mostly the same. Like that's the thing. Like I'm playing Nocturne and I'm seeing a lot of the same themes and the same, I can kind of tell where the story is going already. So again, it's not super. It doesn't make me want to keep playing. So basically, I tossed that aside and I've started Suikoden 2. And
oh God.
Yeah, well, it's much more in line with what I wanted, I think.
You just dove in the deep end, though. That's a long game.
Apparently, it's about 50 hours, which is about what it. Nocturne is. So I'm trading one 50-hour game for another.
I mean, it's 50 hours, but that game has a ton of like quests and stuff that will stretch that length out.
I'm talking about like for completists. I checked howlongtobeat.com and
I don't know.
We'll see.
I would be interested to see what your take on some of the other like threads of Atlus's work is. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and like recommend you go play Demon Summoner Raido Kuzunoha versus the Soulless Army.
Actually, that was one of the games I got for $250.
I figured it was because I know that game went on like deep super sale.
Yeah, and I played like the tutorial and I was like, wow, this is a slow-ass Devil May Cry kind of game. And I couldn't even stick with Devil May Cry in the HD trilogy. So I was like, I'm not even going to play this. So I already uninstalled it. Like
My enduring memory of that game is its key art is probably the greatest key art in the history of video games.
Yeah, it's got a fun setting. And you know, like you play as a kind of a assistant detective in 14th century Japan. 14th century is way too old.
No.
There's
like,
something about 14. He's the 14th generation.
He's Raido Kuzunoha the 14th. Yes.
Okay.
No, it's set in like the early 1900s.
Yeah.
Like bowler hats and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But
no,
yeah,
I got that and I got its sequel and yeah. and installed.
Oh, you
them
bought
both.
You bought Versus King Abaddon too, just to get in there, huh?
I don't know what I was thinking. Like probably I was probably thinking, oh, two Shin Megami Tensei games for $2.50 each. Let's get on that. But you know, like by purchasing a video game is not making, like, you're not making a solemn vow to see it through. So yeah, I do not feel obligated to actually play them.
Fair enough. All right, so I'm going to wrap up new business. I also have been off this week and staying at home, mostly just because I just needed the time to unwind. And I have been throwing myself at Xenoblade 2 because I want to finish it. And I've got other stuff I want to play. And I want to be able to kind of to wrap up 2018 and say, like, for, at least for the context of the show, these are my 2018 games that I really enjoy. I mean, not, it's not like this is work or anything. It's just I'm prioritizing stuff that I want to talk about on the show. And then I've got stuff that, like, Nier that is separate that is also trying to get worked on. So I figured, you know, I was at, like, 90 hours. I'll be done by, like, Tuesday. And here we are on Thursday, and I just completed Chapter 9. I'm near the end. But I'm burying the lead here because I'm at 130 hours in Xenoblade 2. Just an outrageous number of hours. And I have packed them on lately in big chunks. Because this is a very good game for just kind of like, hey, I have the whole day off. I'm going to queue up some stuff on YouTube or on Netflix on my laptop and just grind out some quests. And the thing is, this game gives some really fun quests. Not that the mechanics are particularly fun. Like, not that it's like, oh man, I love collecting 12 golden gears so I can upgrade this guy. It's more that they did a pretty good job, like, telling a good, let me take a step back, a good quest in an RPG in particular, or like a little side quest, tells a complete narrative. You know, there's a character that maybe eats either one of your members or it's been introduced who has a problem. They go through a character arc to solve that problem. They come out on the other side with the problem solved, and they are slightly changed for it. And this game has a lot of those. There's a lot of these little quests where, you know, the reward may not be very significant, but the little story sequence that goes with it's pretty fun. I mean, it's got some that are just boring. There's one where there's a research team, and it's two members. The guy is at the base of a mountain in Gormont, and his assistant, she's gone and climbed up the mountain, and he's like, hey, can you go talk to her in a car down here? I can't seem to reach her from here. And all she's doing is getting to weird places that are hard to get to, where I'm having to spend a lot of time going, like, how the fuck do I get to where you are? And that's not nearly as fun in this game as it is in Xenoblade X with its crazy jumping, or in Zelda with its climbing. With the very limited jumping here, sometimes, especially in Gormont, which is very vertical, getting from here to there can be a real chore. But some of these quests have told really neat little stories, or they've given some color to one of the characters, or I get to see how two of the characters in the party interact more organically. And I've had fun doing those. But some of them take a long time. And some of them take a long time because you have to engage with the mercenary system, which is you can assign your extra blades, because at this point I have 99, which is the most you can hold, 99 common core crystals that I haven't popped. And every core crystal I get just gets wiped away because I don't need any more generic blades. I'm good. I've got, I would guess, 60, 70 blades. I'm fine. I've got a bunch of rare blades, and I'm getting to the point where I don't even pop the rare crystals, which give you a better chance of getting those, because I think I've got most of them. I think I've even got one, like, super premium crystal lying around, which almost guarantees you one. Just like, I'm good. I don't need blades. I've got a lot of, if I pop a rare blade, I might get a story quest for that rare blade, and that's going to eat up another 3 hours. But some of the quests require you engage that system, which is basically the missions. It's a bunch of missions, and they have requirements. You have to pick blades to fill out all the requirements. So maybe, like, it needs two female and one animal, or it needs somebody with wind mastery, or it needs somebody who has forestry skills. And then there's supplemental bonuses that you can tack on. And each mission takes a certain amount of time, and blades that are on the mission get fill out their skill tree as a consequence of being on it. So they get points towards filling out their skill tree, even if they're not in battle. And you can use the secondary conditions. So, like, maybe it needs a dark, it needs dark mastery and two females. But if you add a wind mastery, you can cut some time off how long this thing takes to run. And it just runs in the background. It's like a clicker. So that superficially makes some of these quests run longer. Then you go out and do other quests to kill time while that thing's running so you can get back to the quest you're on. And in the process, you're palling around Mor Ardain, and you find somebody out in the middle of a field who's being attacked, and that triggers another quest. And now you've got three screens of quests, and we can't have that. I need to send these quests out. So let me go run some quests to get it back down to one page. Hmm. Well, okay, now I'm back on one page. All right, oh, that thing finished. I need to go take care of that. Well, that spawned a new quest. Okay, well, this is a long quest, and I'm trying to solve the mystery of where Napon came from. Well, that's actually kind of interesting. I want to know where these furry trade money-grubbing monsters came from. Let's go run this some more. Oh, this thing's locked. I need to get some skills. Let me go grind up rock skills so he can be better at lockpicking so I can bust into this guy's house. Like, there's these weird trade-offs of stuff that's just happening. And it very quickly finds a way where, like, I'm managing three quests in my head even though I only have one active quest. And I'm like, okay, I need to go to Indol to take care of three different quests. I'm going to go knock all three of them out at the same time, even though only one's active. And then I'm going to jump back to Argentum to go turn one of them in and then pick up this other quest I know is over there. And in the meantime, I've got two things related to quests running in the mercenary screen. Okay, I can manage my time. And then like 5 hours have passed and you haven't touched the main story at all. And canonically, our team is still trapped somewhere and can't get out and trying to find a way to get free. But, you know, the warp system kind of makes that superficial. And everybody's worried because if they don't hurry, they're all going to die. Well, you know, instead we've gone and we've done people's laundry for the last 5 hours. But it's fine. And so this game is a fucking time sink. Like, in ways I was not expecting, and in blocks that I wasn't prepared for. And it's now done something where I know this game has flaws. And I think a patch comes out tonight that fixes a couple of them. And some of them are just like, I don't understand how you didn't think this through. It's called Tora Tora in the Japanese ones, same thing. But Tiger Tiger is this game that you can play with Tora in Tora Tora's house that gets you parts for his blade. And it's actually kind of hard. Like, considering her progression is tied into your ability to score points in that game, it's actually really quite difficult. And it wants you to get, like, I want to say that to unlock one of her skills requires, like, 30,000? And I've cleared stages and have never gotten over 9. So I'm like, well, how the fuck do you get 30? So one of the changes they're making is they're making an easy mode for that. One of the changes is if you hit the warp button, you don't have to drill through what continent you're going to be on, what region you're going to be on, and where you want to go. It assumes you want to be in the same place you're in. So some basic stuff like that that shouldn't be this difficult. I think some of the warp placement's kind of shitty. And some of the enemy variety needed to be better. But, like, man, today I just ground through story. I basically said, like, quests, get out. I'm not looking at quests. I'm not messing with quests. I'm going through story. And holy shit, is it going places. Like, it's by far of the three games they've made, the three Xenoblade games, it's by far the most complicated in terms of what it's doing, in terms of, like, these people are here, these people are here, this is the relationship between them, these are the motivations you're having to keep track of, this is what caused this. It's still doing their weird philosophical stuff that this team is known for, all the way back to, you know, the PlayStation days. But, like, even though it's got flaws, it's kind of working its way into my heart now. And, like, there's going to be a moment where I'm talking, when I alluded to this, when we're talking about, like, what are the most, for me, one of my five favorite games, where I'm going to go, like, okay, now we have to have the conversation of games I spent the most time with or games I think were best. Because, like, I'm probably on pace for 140 hours, if I had to guess. Because I'm I can tell I'm pretty close to the end because I'm running out of people to wipe out. Like I'm running out of antagonists. So at some point, and not in the sense of like, oh man, you beat him, but now he's back. I am literally wiping them out. So at this point, it's like, okay, well, I'm near the stated goal of the game and I'm running out of people to eliminate. Therefore, I must be at the end finally. But I know the only reason I made any progress today, and I burned through an entire chapter and the game is divided into these long chapters, is because I basically refuse to look at the subquest screen. There are three subquests that I want to know where they go, and I'm worried they're going to create their own subquest, as they sometimes do. Sometimes they'll spawn like five, and then it'll be like, complete these five quests to finish this quest. And you're like, fuck you, really? And that'll have you jetting all around the planet to solve them. This is a really... I'm not sure how... Like, I'm kind of torn on this game, because I don't think... From a quality standpoint, I think there's definitely some stuff that should have been better at release. There's stuff that is confounding that it's the way it is. Decisions that you just go like, what, why is it like that? I think the blade system is convoluted sometimes. You know, you have a wind blade who's a rare blade, but she doesn't have wind mastery by default. She has to get it later, which means you have to like, if you run into these environmental conditions where you have to have like five wind mastery and three focus equipped. Every blade has these different field skills and it stacks. So if you have like five, if you had five blades who all had one wind mastery or one blade that had five wind mastery, although I don't think there are any that have that much, like it's fine either way or any combination of them. And it's across the whole party. So everybody's blades. But that means like you're going into the blade menu for your party constantly in some of these places where it's just full of these little environmental puzzles. And just swapping blades. And then you're going and you're solving that puzzle. And then you're advancing a little bit. Then you're swapping blades again to solve the next puzzle.
I was wondering about that because, I haven't really got too deep into that stuff yet. But I was thinking like, okay, at some point, you know, when you're talking about multi-level obstacles.
Right.
Compound multi-level obstacles. You know, I was wondering, is this just all the blades I have, or is it the ones I have equipped?
It's the ones you have equipped.
Yeah, that's a bad decision, but...
I get it, though, because I've got 60 blades. I would be able to blast through any puzzle there is. I would just go walk up to them and go like, done, 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 done.
I mean, if it's as trivial as equipping them, I mean...
I know.
Isn't there an argument for that being better?
Yeah,
there is. I think the argument is it's not just a matter of equipping them. It's a matter of finding a way to fit them into your party. Because remember, everybody has their own blades. So Wolfric, who's a blade, big monstery dude.
Yeah.
He's a story blade. So you get him. Everybody gets him. He has great focus. Like his focus skill can be leveled up really strong, and he's really useful because a lot of these puzzle things require focus. But right now he's with Rex. And so if I need to get another blade, I can't take Pyra out of Rex's team. And I need Wolfric to solve the focus thing, but maybe Rex has a level 3 dark mastery blade and I need to get dark mastery up to 7. Well, how do I slot these pieces in together? Well, if Wolfric has to go, can I make up his contribution on focus somewhere else and still hit the numbers I'm looking for? And that's kind of where the challenge to this is. It's like managing these pieces.
It's like the most demanding additions.
But the thing is, like, at some point you've got a big party and, you know, they've got, you know, Tora's not going to contribute but so much, but you've got to like kind of manage these things out and try to figure out, okay, I know this blade has Keen Eye level 3. Let me go dig him out and assign him. Oh, he's already assigned. Shit. Okay, I need to come up with two more Keen Eye. Okay, who has Keen Eye? And there's no way to sort on skills. Like, if you're looking for just mastery, I can just sort them by element and drill through them. But things like, hey, can I just search for, I need foresight. It's the same with the mercenary assignments because they need those same stats. Like, I know I have a blade that has foresight. The mercenary assignments let me pick it. Who the fuck is it? Like the ability to just
because it wouldn't let you pick it if you didn't have
right. But now I've got so many blades. It's
like why not suggest it then? If it's gatekeeping in that way, then it could kind of go the next step and just suggest this is who you've got that fulfills the criteria.
And there's a situation where to complete a quest, you had to collect batteries. Those were a mercenary quest you sent out to go collect the batteries. And you needed to collect, effectively, it required four of them to fill up the little bar. And you've probably seen this where there's some merchants who will just take, they'll just have a list of crap they'll take from you and it fills up the bar as you give them stuff. And the goal is to get the bar all the way filled. In this case, it's energy and the battery gives you 30, where everything else gives you one. So it's like, okay, well, I'll just go get the batteries. But I wish I could just go okay, I want the same party to go out and run the battery quest again. Because I had engineered this party to shave off the maximum amount of time and to fulfill the parameters and then just dedicate as quickly as possible and just dedicate the rest to just, I want to shave this time in a third. But I had to remember the party because I couldn't just go reissue. Or if I rearrange the team, there's a section in the really late game on one of the continents where it's a secret area. And unlike a lot of the Xenoblade games where secret area was all about hey, did you think to look behind this thing? A lot of times secret areas are hidden behind these puzzles. Where I think it's four, maybe it's five distinct puzzle sequences to get through to the secret area. So in one case, you need to have Earth Mastery and High Jump to clear a gap in the ladder. In one case, you need to have Earth Mastery and Extreme Strength to bust through a wall. In one case, you need Electric and Focus to power up a console. It's all this stuff. But now I go and I look at the map, and the map actually highlights ones you haven't solved. And I'm like, oh, hey, I can go solve that. I bet there's something cool behind it. In some cases, there's not. In some cases, it's just a chest with gear that would have been super cool when I found this thing, but now it's kind of useless. In some cases, it's a whole new quest line. Or it's the solution to a quest line I've been sitting on for 30 hours because I don't know what to do with it.
It does seem like some of this stuff you could just put down to questionable decision making, but some of you wonder, if it was a bit rushed, if more time to play test and get feedback and all that could have minimized some of these things, and then that kind of brings you back to, did it have to come out now? I mean,
Greg, there was an opportunity to release at the same time as five other RPGs, and they had to take it.
Well, you say that, but I think Nintendo having a game in November was important, and I think what will likely happen
Didn't they already, though?
No, Mario was October.
Skyrim.
It was November. It just came out at the very end of October.
Right. In that case, Mario probably slides a couple weeks. But there's stuff in this game, like the fact that I can't just set a default configuration for my blades, because you can carry three at any one time. But like I said, Rex has a shit ton of blades at this point. If I go and I reset him for a puzzle, why can't I just go back to a default? Hey,
yeah,
go ahead.
Castlevania, sort of Metroidvania style, games kind of with the soul system and all that kind of stuff. They ran into this sort of thing, and then eventually you had a bunch of presets you could make and just sort of flick between. Order of Ecclesia or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, this is not a new problem for games.
It's just in this case, I don't know what the maximum number of blades you can have. I know at this point in the game, it's literally just hurling core crystals at me. I killed a tyrant. So first off, I'm way over leveled because of these quests. I'm in the last area, and I was four levels higher than a tyrant. And tyrants, if you're not familiar with the Xenoblade lore, are the big scary enemies you'll see in videos of the game that are running around at level 90 in the starting area, and they've got special names. You're not supposed to be a higher level than the tyrant in a story sequence. The tyrant's supposed to scare you. But they take a long time to kill anyway, because this game has way too much health. Which, again, another decision where they said, let's make everything a war of attrition. But I killed a tyrant this evening and got five core crystals out of it, which is just absurd. Because if I was popping every blade, it's oh my god, that's five more blades that Rex would be carrying around. Jesus. I don't need those. I don't need any of this. But yeah, you could in theory, there is a maximum. I don't know what that number is. I've never hit it. but it's high. I can tell you that. I can tell you that right now. So, good lord. But it doesn't. It does mean a lot of the blades feel kind of superfluous. But they have different skills. So sometimes, like, hey, there's this blade that I need. I have a mercenary mission. Oh, I've never used this blade before, but he has a weird skill that's super useful now. And then I end up using him in a lot of stuff. So maybe they never see like the generic blades almost never see combat, but like they do a lot of stuff for the mercenary missions, which bring back gold and experience for me, which helps me continue my progression towards killing the level 92 dinosaur.
The real goal of the game.
I ran across a level 100, and it's like the smallest enemy in the game, and it's just level 100 non-aggro. And I was like, I don't want to mess with that. That's a real bad-looking dude. I do wish this game told you who was aggro and who wasn't, because the previous two games had done that. This game...
The red eye or whatever.
Yeah, or it'd be like sound triggers. In X, they had different things that could trigger them, so like sight, sound, whatever. In this one, you just kind of have to know that goggles are aggro, so keep your distance. But at the same time, this game's also more liberal with your level is high enough that these things don't mess with you. I think it was like 10 in the other ones. I've seen generally around 8, in some cases 7. They just kind of go like, I don't think I can take you, so I'm just going to go over here and ignore that you're there standing and staring at me and hope you just don't cause me any trouble, which is nice. But yeah, I'm rounding out. This game has issues, and as Greg said, it's like focus testing issues. It's like, hey, here's 130 hours of game. Can you play it and give us some feedback and then play it again and give us some more feedback? No, I can't do that. It's too much. And of course, this game launched worldwide, which means like things had to be done.
Yeah, which has not happened before.
Right. Things had to be done earlier in order to allow localization to happen. So, you know, maybe there's some of the stuff there too, where they had to prioritize some other things that maybe could wait till later in the development cycle in the past, to get the script and stuff out there for all this voice recording. Cause there is a shit ton of voice recording. Like, oh my God. And all those videos you see on the internet of like during a big fight, characters are all screaming at each other. There's a section of Mor Ardain where you're fighting soldiers and I aggroed, it's like a back area with really high levels. I aggroed everybody in that base. So it was like, I don't know, 7 or 8 soldiers. And they're all screaming, don't forget me, as they're trying to attack me. My party's screaming. My blades are screaming. And it's just fucking nightmares. I really wish the capture button worked on this game because I would have captured that, posted it with just the text, oh God, no.
And then it would have sounded like that sort of expository bit at the start of Event Horizon, where they're yes. getting sucked into hell or whatever with the Latin.
Yeah, you've almost certainly seen the video with the Mor Ardain soldiers screaming in their Scottish accents, weird phrases like "Don't forget me" as they're attacking you. which in my brain I think it's like after you kill me, don't forget me. But what I think they're trying to imply is that like, hey, you need to pay attention to me. I'm going to take you out. And I'm turfing these guys. My blade configuration right now has a bunch of auto heals in it, and so they're actually doing less damage than I'm healing, even though we're the same level. So my health is literally not dropping below zero, and there's like a dozen of them, and their stuff that's flying around and shit. It's a mess, and you know my party's screaming non sequiturs about nothing. My blades are talking because most of them are legendary blades and they're just like rambling about nonsense. And it's just like, this is the dumbest shit in the world.
Needless to say, well, it's not, I guess it isn't needless, but you might have guessed based on things I said about Rive earlier, I dialed that setting almost down to nothing.
Oh, it's so good.
It's still in there, so it isn't unnaturally quiet kind of thing, but
where everybody's just silently
really
fighting.
Discern what they're saying.
Oh, it's so good. And to give one more thing that this game needed to fix is I in the late game area, I ran into a couple heart to hearts, you know, where the characters are basically reflecting in different configurations about the end of the what's happening.
Okay.
And the music in that area has a guitar riff in it, and I couldn't fucking hear a word they were saying, even though I've already tuned it down.
Even with the cutscene, because the cutscene setting is a completely separate setting for voices. But if you crank that all the way up, you still, but you have music high in the mix in general. You still have this problem, which is, yeah, that's weird.
Like,
again, just these little sloppy things about it. It just seems rushed to me.
One of the characters is talking, but their lips are moving, but all I can see is the text. I can kind of hear muffled stuff. It's like I'm ordering through the world's worst drive-thru. It's amazing. One of the late blades you get is a story blade. Has a, you know, there's ones where you've gotten their combo meter all the way up to 4 and they get the big artsy explosion. The Switch just can't handle it. Like, it just can't handle it. And it goes, like, crazy pixelated, like it's a real media video from, like, 1998.
The dynamic resolution kicking in hard.
And I'm not even talking about it. I'm talking on, like, docked. It's insane. It's crazy looking. First time I saw it, I'm like, was that an effect? And then I'm like, no. The Switch is literally just falling apart trying to render this one. This is fantastic. And then it powers up later, and it gets even more crazy, and the Switch is just on fire. It's awesome. Like, they should have just reviewed that one and gone, no, we need to dial this back. There's way too many things happening. There's, like, water effects going on in the background. Characters are still fighting in the background. Yeah, so maybe that's being rendered.
If anybody makes it into, like, the next Smash Brothers from this, that should be their final Smash. It's just dynamic resolution. It'd be like the Luigi negative zone thing, but less baffling.
Oh, it's fantastic. And with all that said, I find myself falling into this game for long stretches of time. And that's bad. That's bad for me. But it's good for this game. I've done a full 180 on it.
You've got, that's how you got 100 hours in front of me. Yeah.
Yeah. we're back to the if you listen to the show way 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 back when, we've seen a brief and terrifying resurgence of JRPG James, who can burn through these games really fast in big hour chunks, and I'm not comfortable with that. All right, that's going to do it for new business. When we come back, we're going to do a little bit of listener mail, so stay tuned. Listener mail time. I've had people say that the "and we're back" thing needs to get changed, so I changed it. But then I mentioned it, so I didn't really change it. But it's listener mail. I almost said it. I almost fucking said it. You can email us at rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. As a reminder, we are asking for your last call for WiiWare games we should consider for our WiiWare Retroactive Part 2. Remember, this time we're going to be a lot more, on point with the game. Really should be a game that is going to go away for real when WiiWare dies. Not a game that's going away on this platform, but a game that's just, you know, this is a game that will not exist. Because that's more of the historical interest. But you can send us those or just your questions to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com in a way not dissimilar from the ways these individuals did. Greg, would you please read the first email?
Very well. Jonathan writes, firstly, what's one modern collection you'd like to see on the Switch? It has to be a plausible port from a publisher and processes standpoint, but appropriateness for playing in the bathtub is not a mandatory consideration, as the current guest list here will attest. You can also make an existing franchise into a collection, so something like Assassin's Creed 1-4 is fair game. I'd really like Mass Effect to take another crack at Nintendo fans. I was amazed that 3 got put on Wii U instead of a collection, so here's our second chance.
That's a fantastic collect. So this was sponsored by our sponsor, Jesus. This was triggered by a Kotaku article about like games that they thought needed to be remade, I believe was the context.
There's a lot of those articles out there, like how every game should be on the Switch. Like, freaking calm down already. Jeez. Well,
so the thing about games like the remake one is that, or the this game should be remade, is that it's really easy to make those and then just sit them in a can somewhere and then just drop them when everybody's out of the office. Which is why you'll see a lot of articles like that. And the Switch one makes it even easier, because then you can just throw the phrase, and would be great portably, And you can actually recycle your article from about this last year. I'm really jaded about this industry, if you can't tell. So we're going to go ahead and recycle this from last year, because I'm pretty sure we've talked about this at some point. So let's get going. Who has a collection or a plausible collection they'd like to put on Switch?
Well, the Knights of the Old Republic games are still out there, as far as I can tell, on PC anyway, and probably still on Xbox XBLA. Like, I don't think that they've been...
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they've been withdrawn from circulation since Disney acquired the Star Wars license. So it would be cool to get a collection of the two Knights of the Old Republic games on the Switch. I've played the first one. I played like the copy of a roommate who had bought it after looking at the box and thinking it was a shooter. And then he proceeded to never play it. And I guess he didn't believe in trading games in. So eventually I just picked it up and played through it and just, I loved it. And so, but I've never played the sequel, which I hear is very, very flawed because unfinished, but also very interesting. So,
so the thing about those games is that they're, what's the best way of putting it? They're still out there. They're still available. But the only thing that changed after the Disney acquisition was they became non-canon. So they didn't pull.
Oh,
them.
No. I can't.
Oh, no,
get
no, I know, I know, I know. I'm saying the only
stamp of approval.
Okay, Guillaume. All I'm saying is the only thing that changed was they just said they're not canon, so they didn't pull them or anything. So they're still out there, and they might even still be willing to sell them. And because EA had a hand in their creation, and because BioWare made them,
right.
all the contracts and stuff still lay the right way for that to happen.
Yeah, the only thing that would suck about a version on the Switch is that it probably wouldn't support mods, which have, I think, added a lot, like have fixed a lot of things that were broken about the KOTOR 2. So,
right.
Yeah,
but you would hope if they are going to go in and do a collection and make the, at the very least have to up-res the game, they might implement some of those changes in the game to make it function more user friendly.
Yeah, you would hope.
you would.
Yeah, it's been a while since I played an EA game, but I guess I don't have much faith in that kind of that they would put the work in it.
I don't know. The most recent Star Wars told me that all that matters is hope. Apparently, so it's fine. Nothing else matters. Like a good plan, just have hope. Greg, do you have one you want to go with?
Well, yeah, I mean, Mass Effect's a good one that Jonathan mentions, and I think I've got to go in a similar place considering that's been taken. Because, yeah, the biggest thing for me, obviously this came up with Skyrim, is just the feeling of like, okay, you know, because I've had the PS3, I've had Xbox One, and I've had access to games, in many cases, but haven't necessarily ended up kind of going into those series because it just didn't seem like, you know, the time commitment. I could really kind of make it work. So Mass Effect would be one, but the other one, like sort of talked about a bit myself before as well, is Fallout, maybe 3 and New Vegas. I guess if you could port one, maybe it wouldn't be too much work to port the other. So kind of those two together would make sense, I feel like. And again, like, it's just those games, it's different, especially given the fact that they're kind of famous for being a bit visually drab. It's kind of hard to justify that amount of time in front of the TV, I feel like. But portably, sure. I think it could work.
I think those would be a really good candidate for something that you'd want to be able to take with you and play. And those games are much in the same way as Skyrim. They're about kind of just creating your own experience and going out and doing stuff and not necessarily having a long run time and like hard linear quests to go run, work your way through. So again, they're the kind of game you could just pick up and play for a while and maybe not accomplish anything in particular, but they work well if you just got some time to kill on a bus.
And the sleep mode just makes it so easy
to
pick it back up. Much easier. Like, I mean, like in most of those, you can save anywhere, but it still takes a while to load up the save and, you know, stuff like that. But here you just, like, interrupt it and then pick it right back up.
Skyrim was very sort of interruptible, I found. And it probably just ended up they're giving me the kind of license to, you know, go off into a bunch of different directions without feeling like, oh, you know, what about, you know, picking this back up? It just didn't even enter into the thinking. It's just like, do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, the sleep mode in Xenoblade has been used for exactly that same purpose. Like, I have to stop for a minute, but I don't have to load anything. I just fire this thing up and I'm dropped back in the game and we're good to go. It's a very nice feature in this context. So I want it to be a bit more, I don't know what word I want to use, out there. Like, I wanted to pick something that's a little bit different, a little bit more on the edge. And I thought about, like, what series are we missing? And, you know, the Devil May Cry collection that got announced recently would be fine. But I don't think that's coming, to be honest. So I thought about what's not out there on Switch that could be. And we are getting the fourth, I guess it's the fourth, Valkyria Chronicles game. And so I know Valkyria Chronicles 3, I think. I don't think it ever came out in the West. I think that one was so 2 and 3 were PSP games. I think 2 came out and 3 didn't. So if we could get all 3 of those games released in a collection, and they remade Valkyria Chronicles 1, but they didn't release it on Switch. If they could just drop all 3 of those out, that'd be pretty cool of them. Although I'd be pretty pissed if I bought Valkyria Remastered and then, like, a year later they dumped Valkyria 2 and 3 as well in a collection with it. But, you know, it is what it is. But that wasn't weird enough for me. I needed to do better. I need to be better. So I thought, what game have I played that would be my equivalent of tub time? Not that I play my Switch in a tub because I'm not some weirdo deviant. But what would I want to be able to play for extended periods of time, accomplish nothing anywhere in my world? And to me, I'm going to go ahead and say, I want I'm going to ask for a collection of the Dusk subseries of the Atelier games, because fuck it. I've got 300 hours to set on fire while I try to find the right way to make sweets in my Atelier using magic. I don't give a crap. Let's do this. Let's make this happen. I want the overly cute world of mixing the remnants of monsters into making a cake to happen on the Switch on the go at all times. We are, I believe they've explicitly said that the next one is coming on Switch, but nobody likes the current series. Everybody likes the Dusk sub-series. So go ahead and go release those 3 games again and just count the money, Tecmo Koei. Count the tens of dollars you will make from this transaction. Make it happen. I talked about Esha on the show, which is the middle game in that sub-series. And I really liked it. I thought it was a really well-made game. And I've played a couple games in that series. And they function really well at what they're doing. But holy shit, I cannot imagine a game that less needs to be on the TV than that series. Like, at all. Because 95% of your time is wandering around collecting resources or staring at a pot while you drop them in there to figure out if they're the right combination to make a shining birthday cake instead of a regular one. There's no reason that has to be on your TV. You're spending 60% of that time looking at words. It's fine. So the second part of his email.
Oh, yeah, sure. Although I will say one quick thing, one last suggestion I've got for games that I have played already, but I still think would be a good fit, is Portal 1 or 2. They'd be a really good fit on Nintendo platform in general, I feel. And maybe Portal 2, you know, could kind of go the local co-op route as opposed to the online, you know, it has online co-op and I played a bit with a friend of mine through, you know, and talking over Skype and stuff, but probably, you know, if you can have it, you know, I think it'd work better locally with the wireless between 2 Switches. Because, you know, it just be easier to kind of convey what you mean sometimes when you're trying to sort of say, okay, this is, you know, what I think is kind of going to help us towards the solution here. So, you know, and it's just, they're two of the sort of most you know, kind of acclaimed kind of action puzzle kind of hybrid games in the past several years. That I think, you know, especially on a platform that's got plenty of Zelda fans, just seems like a natural fit to me.
I was going to say, the only other way if somebody wanted to take my money from me right now, and I'd feel really fucking terrible about it, would be if Capcom just said, all right, all the Ace Attorney games up to this point, bang, Switch, $70. And I'd give them my money, and I'd feel bad about it. I'd probably start drinking, and I'd feel dirty, but it would probably still happen. And that number could probably float up to 80 if it's all of them, and I'd still feel like shit, but it could happen. So don't do that. I don't want that to happen.
So the second part of Jonathan's question is, inspired by Mega Man, create an older collection to port on Switch, specifically N64 and earlier. He suggests Castlevania, NES through Super NES games. Some of those are hard to find and ludicrously expensive on eBay.
So he says N64 and earlier, but doesn't include the N64 Castlevania games. And that's interesting because they're also probably harder to get your hands on.
So the question is, would you also, I assume they're being excluded for quality's sake, would you also exclude the Castlevania 2? Because if you start Castlevania 2, it'd just be like the words in that Castlevania font, you don't want to play this, and then you just get bounced back to the first menu. But I mean, maybe he's just not including them because he just forgets they exist. Because what I'm trying to remember the two games were.
Well, the one was just Castlevania,
right?
Funnily enough,
Castlevania 64.
Yeah, it wasn't even Castlevania 64. It was simply Castlevania, and then when it was not patched, as patching didn't exist yet, but it was had a. Effectively just an updated version with more of the content that apparently they'd originally intended to put in the game in the first place, but were given time to finish. It was Castlevania Legacy of Darkness, I believe, the subtitle.
That is a Castlevania-ass Castlevania title.
Well, it was really kind of working the blank-a-blank thing pretty hard before it became the series standard with all the GBA games. It was a little bit pioneering in that sense.
Well, Rondo got there first.
Yeah, Rondo, but that we didn't get an official title for that, you know, here or anything. So we didn't know.
We had the that broke into Symphony of the Night.
Yeah, the does mean a lot though for me. I think there's just something about when it is literally blank of blank that is significant.
So, do you feel the same way about Circle of the Moon then?
Yeah, see, that's not so bad. Although, funnily enough, Circle of the Moon in Europe was also just called Castlevania.
Oh, fuck off. Why?
Yeah, it didn't have a subtitle. So and the N64 game and the NES game were all just Castlevania.
Oh, my God. But yeah, I mean, I guess Portrait of Ruin, Order of Shadow, Order of Ecclesia, Curse of Darkness, Dawn of Sorrow, Lament of Innocence, Aria of Sorrow. I think I missed one somewhere.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Lords of Shadow. Lords of Shadow, Mirror of Fate. you got to have that compound. Blank of blank to the power of blank of blank.
What if there was an of between them? What if it was Lords of Shadow of Mirror of Fate? Would something self-destruct somewhere and just, no, you can't do this anymore?
Yeah, hopefully. Well, the series is sort of self-destructed, doesn't it?
So, it
shouldn't really joke that much.
Oh. Castlevania Pachi of Slots.
I mean, for me, my choice here is, well, let's say the one certainly in terms of stuff I haven't played very much of anyway is Panzer Dragoon.
Ooh.
Yeah, because the problem is those games... You know, being on your beginning and then really thinking of the Saturn games, the Panzer Dragoon 2 and the Saga, the RPG game.
Yeah.
Although I'd settle for just the two shooters, to be honest.
Would you want Orta as well, the Xbox game?
Yeah, the Xbox One maybe, but I'm just thinking, Saturn games are the ones that have been really, you know, sort of that have been lost to time so much because the Saturn was not a particularly successful system and it had all this technical weirdness and stuff. So it's just like digital re-releases of those games aren't as common as with a lot of the, you know, other platforms and stuff. So that's kind of why those spring to mind for me. But also because, yeah, I played a bit of the first one on a friend's system. But beyond that, you know, it's the sort of game I would love, but never really got to play that much of. So, you know, I think that would be pretty damn cool.
Yeah, I would think for the collection, you'd probably want to do Panzer Dragoon, Zwei, and Orta, because they all kind of have the same mechanics.
Yeah, the sort of shooter trilogy of them. But I mean, Saga is just the rarity question.
Yes, Saga's the one people can never play, because it's impossible to get a hold of, and it's a Saturn game, so it's like doubly impossible to get a hold of. But I don't know that they could ever... They could justify doing a collection of that game with that game in it, because that would take a ton of work.
Yeah, this is the problem, isn't it? It just seems with Saturn stuff, you know, getting it up to snuff to get it out there, just consistently, we can only assume from, you know, what the evidence that keeps getting presented to us is just deemed to be far too much trouble, you know, than it's worth, basically.
I think there's a Game Gear game they could throw in instead. I think it's like Panzer Dragoon Mini. And there was like a licensed one for like a Tiger system too. Just throw everything but Saga in there to really drive the point home. But yeah, that would be really good. I've played a little bit of Orta, which I know isn't the highest regarded game in the series, but it's neat and it's got an aesthetic. You know, it's got a thing it's going for. I don't know if I like it, but sometimes just having a thing like this is what we want. This is what we're trying to do. Can carry a lot, and that game certainly does have that. And that was one of the earliest like Sega developed. I mean, Smilebit made it, but like Sega published games for originally intended for a console, not their own, because they dropped out in 2001. I think that game came out in 2002. Like really fast.
Yeah, they did. I mean, when you think about how little they tend to do now, you know, how much it's just got winnowed down to, you know, Sonic and Aliens and, you know, like not Football Manager.
Well, and lately
yeah,
Yakuza.
Yeah, that's true.
Which, to be fair though, I would say that's actually probably a net positive. It's showing that they're starting to go back.
Oh
into
no,
their,
that's true. But it is funny to think how quickly they cropped up on GameCube, on GBA, on Xbox, PlayStation, of course.
Oh yeah, with exclusives across the board.
It was. I'm not saying it was an easy transition or whatever, but it certainly didn't like result in like some fallow period or whatever. I mean, Sega's presence grew in a way. In terms of the software, just blossoming out onto all these different platforms and stuff.
I mean, you had franchises like Shinobi and Streets of Rage. Streets of Rage is theirs, right?
Yeah,
showing up as exclusives on PS2. You had games exclusive. Like they made the marketing deals real fast. It was an impressive turnaround that went away quickly. But that's okay.
And Nintendo nabbed that. Important Billy Hatcher.
Sweet.
Yeah, I gotta get that. Ooh. He still insisted that was a really good game when I spoke to him, so I don't know. he didn't even work there anymore. All right, Guillaume, what do you got?
Well, I was going to say Suikoden, I've got RPGs on my mind, I guess. but since I've already started, I've played Suikoden 1 and I've started Suikoden 2. I'm probably not going to... I wouldn't touch a collection on the Switch. So maybe like Square Enix stuff that was on the PlayStation. Like that would be neat to get on a Nintendo platform at last. Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9 could all... would all be welcome. And like the thing is, again... I probably nabbed those during a PSN sale. Since I didn't make a promise at that time that I would actually play them, I didn't. But and since that time, also like Square Enix has released better ports of those same games where they add features such as being able to fast forward.
Final Fantasy 12 has that fast forward in game because of the Gambit system where you just program how the characters respond. You don't even really need to watch the fights.
Right. So having something on Switch with those features would be pretty sweet. And I mean, like I think those ports are on iOS, on PC, on Sony consoles. So there's, I don't know. I don't see what would prevent them from coming to Switch.
So my semi-ironic, semi like I really want this answer would be Seiken Densetsu Collection, which exists on Switch, but we're not gonna get it. That
No,
would be
we
really
got
cool.
Romancing Saga 2 though.
We did get Romancing Saga 2. Like I would love to be able to play those three games portably, translated for reals. Because they're fun. Like they're fun games. And you could probably make the Joy-Con stuff work for them. So you could have multiplayer on the go with just the Joy-Cons. That doesn't sound very appealing.
When you say translated for reels, are you making reference to Suikoden 3? What am I saying? Which what are we
Secret of
talking about
Mana.
again? Secret of Mana.
Yeah, because there are some fan translations out
Right,
there.
so Seiken Densetsu 3 having a fan translation, or the first two games having horrible translations?
This was a joke that had multi heads until you cut
I
them off.
see.
But unlike the Hydra, they do not grow back.
I think at some point in the original on the Game Boy, Julius, the bad guy, sees you and you're completely beat up, and he says, "You've been a bit bad." No, wait, I messed that up. Julius, the bad guy,
I want that
sees
to be
you.
what he says. I want him to say, "You've been a bit beat. No, wait, I messed up." And then he just walks off screen.
Would be great. No. What happens is that you see him for the second time and you've leveled up, so you're stronger, and he says, "Oh, I see you've been a bit better." And of course he means you've gotten stronger, you've gotten better. But that's the level, that's one of the games I learned English from, by the way. So
So it's that game's fault.
yeah, it kind of when I mess up a lot, that's basically Square Enix's fault.
Oh, okay. Well, right now you're playing Suikoden, which also has some questionable translation work, so
A
that's
little
good.
bit more. Yeah, I'm not a I've been inoculated by now.
If I was going to riff off the notion of like the sort of Final Fantasies, that weren't on Nintendo kind of idea, of a particular era, maybe going off the Castlevania thing, the Castlevania like No Homers collection, like Bloodlines, Rondo, and Symphony of the Night, because especially
Ah,
cause Symphony
that would be
still hasn't
amazing.
been on anything Nintendo. It's been
No, it
on a lot
hasn't.
of stuff at
It's been
this
on
point, but yeah,
Xbox.
exactly. It's been on XBLA and stuff, but it's never been on anything Nintendo. Which, it's like, we've had plenty of games that are fundamentally very similar, but to be fair, we've not actually had that on a Nintendo platform, but that seems wrong to me. And Bloodlines, weirdly, never got on VC.
Bloodlines is such a weird
Yeah,
fucking
it's a,
name.
I'm not like.
I'm guessing GameTap has had locked that deal
That's
like
right,
very tightly.
GameTop lined up the sweet Castlevania Bloodlines
Yeah.
license.
Somewhere in the contract was like, you can never let this go anywhere else than GameTap, this service that's gonna last forever.
And Konami said, "Sure, yes, we will make sure this game never goes anywhere else. You will not be able to fight 20-foot tall Frankenstein on any other system." So the more serious, less like, come on, fuck you, Square Enix game answer I have to this is I would love to see the Mega Man Legends trio. Since we're never gonna get Mega Man Legends 3 because the dream is dead. Just being able to play 1, 2 and Tron Bond would be pretty cool. Like they're on the play they're on the PlayStation Store.
I love the fact that that's like the only ones that aren't announced for Switch at this point.
Yes. I've played one to completion a couple times. I've played two a little bit. But I was just never in a place I could sit down and play it because other stuff was going on. I've never even touched the Tron Bond spin-off. But it seems to be, I mean, I've heard generally positive things about it.
Right, it seems like an interesting game. Maybe not something that you fall in love with, but it does, yeah, stuff that hasn't been done to death since.
Well, yeah, and to be fair, nothing in that series has been done to death because it's been killed. It's been done to death. So, Guillaume, would you care to read?
Yes, Ben writes, "Hello all. This year is the year of unexpected surprises. A Xenoblade game came out the year it was announced. Nintendo didn't delay a Zelda game. Well, Konami, yeah, it had...
I guess, it didn't delay it again.
Yeah, Konami released a physical game that wasn't PES. A 25-minute E3 video covered a full year. Two of the greatest games of all time came out. The Neo Geo Rose Again and the Lords of Thunder have been released on the Wii U. How long until Shoaniki? Expecting you to bring the thunder. And it's too bad that John is not here.
The thunder.
So what I don't understand. I mean the fucking Lords of Thunder coming out on Wii U. I don't.
Yeah, it's Afterlife.
Like, can we have a category for Wii U Game of the Year and just give it to that because it's the game of the year?
It is also I think objectively better than Zelda. That did come out on Wii U as well. That's the joke.
You're right. You're right. Okay, the runner-up for Game of the Year. It's The Legend of Zelda, and then Lords of Thunder, and there's not much gap there. Obviously, it's just bang bang.
It was a tough decision.
We had a recount. It was tough, but this is where we ended up. History can judge us. Jesus, Shoaniki on Wii U.
It's not even, have you guys even ever talked about the fact that it's not even that funny of a game to play?
The first one, it's true. That's been covered. It's really the sort of lurid places
it's the game that
it went
that
like.
Came... Yeah, it's right. The PlayStation game
the
in particular. That's
one.
Just
well, the, yeah, with the digital. But even that, like, it's so crappy.
There's a fighting game on the Super Famicom that's
right.
pretty.
But
pretty
the shooter,
weird.
The shooter, like, it, yeah, it's so crappy that it's not really. It's the joke is on you, really. Like it, you don't laugh for very long. I find
everything around that game is funnier than that game. And I think we've covered that in the past. I mean, the funniest thing about that game was the fact that Nintendo of Europe decided to write this short story that somebody really needed to be stopped at some point. Because if I recall correctly, the Nintendo of America one was not nearly as beautiful. I think it was just like, it's a shooter. It's weird. 1,000 Wii points. And then Europe gave us this little novella they wrote describing the ballad of Emperor Builder.
Yeah. Oida 10 and Ben 10 and
yeah, just
stuff.
Like they knew what they had, and that gave us the man's ultimate weapon, and that was really what set us down this path to destruction. But it's. It's kind of crazy to think about the fact that we're here we are with Switch after last year. we got a Xenoblade game, and as he points out, that wasn't announced three years ahead of time.
Yeah, but you know what Switch hasn't got?
What's that? Yet. Give it time. Arcade Classics, Lords of Thunder.
It's never in the arcade. It was on Mega CD, or Sega CD, as you would say.
What was it? It was original launch platform though. Was TG16 CD,
right, yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have they done arcade classics for TG16 games?
No, not yet. No.
I guess not. No.
The Nintendo ones are their sort of departure on that.
Yeah, we've got the Neo Geo stuff, and then we've got Nintendo's arcade, classics and the Versus system stuff and all that. But yeah, we've not gone to. Why do we need to? It's on a vibrant platform as it is. I mean,
actually, that's not true because Data East also.
Oh yeah, forget that. They're not nearly as prolific. But that's true.
No.
We do have some Data East stuff.
But to your point, yeah, why would you need to put them on Switch when they're already on the thriving Wii U, which you can take with you wherever you want as long as you have like a big battery or like a small generator.
just
carry
just
it around.
Sort of like have it built into a bike so that the bike powers it and you play.
Yeah, just pedal really hard. The Arcade Classic series itself is being done by... Yeah. So really, I mean, Hamster, I'm pretty sure Hamster has done TG16 games though. So we could get there. We just have to wait another wait in the hope of the coming of our Lords
yeah,
of
I guess,
Thunder.
I guess the real worry at this point is just that if they wait till when the Switch is on its last legs to put Lords of Thunder on there, that could be like a long time away, judging by its fast start.
Well, you know, maybe we can hope for a quick spiral down so we can get the Lords of Thunder, because that's really all that matters. You're not a video game system if you don't have Lords of Thunder, which means there's a lot of things out there masquerading as what they aren't. Take that, NES. Not having a game that didn't exist when you were around. Well, but that is going to do it for email this week, and in fact for this year, because as I pointed out, we are off next week and we'll be back in 2017. Please send
even beyond 2018.
After I hate all numbers. Those episodes wrong.
Of saying the year?
What year
yeah,
is
I
this, James?
Fuck it. Don't ask me who the president is. I won't remember. I'm
Does
just
Sonny
drink
and Cher
some more.
Still have that stupid show?
Anyway, that's going to do it for this year, whatever year this is. Whatever year you're listening to it, this is the last episode of that year. Sorry. You can send us your WiiWare retro. Now you've got me worried about every noun I'm gonna say.
Sorry.
Your WiiWare retroactive ideas, preferably for games that are likely to cease to exist at the end of the WiiWare service, or just your general questions to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Did I get both the name of the email address and the address domain correct, guys?
Seems to check out.
Because I don't. Okay, excellent. Greg, do we have any feedback from our audience for game recommendations?
Nope, no, not this time anyway.
Damn it, people, send us the game recommendations. And don't send me Bearsworth Manor.
Might have a recommendation.
Do you?
Yeah, today Broken Rules, a developer, sent out a tweet saying that in November 2017... And Yet It Moves on the Wii sold more copies than their Wii U game, which I can't. The name escapes me at the moment.
I played the one
with the birds.
It's all about sort of rotating the world as with the Wii remote as to sort of affect platforming. Yeah,
and indeed it moves apparently. So,
and yet
there you
it
go.
Keeps selling more than something on Wii U. It's going to be sort of like subtitle now.
That's the sequel, the spiritual successor. Well,
Chasing Aurora. So yeah,
Chasing.
More...
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, do we have any music, Greg?
We do. We are recording on the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year for those of us in the northern hemisphere. So, you know, had to be something appropriately wintry. And considering Guillaume was talking about stuff that was 15 years ago and loves anniversaries and all that good stuff, I decided to go with something wintry from Metroid Prime, a game from 15 years ago. Obviously it came out before this, but I did not get to play it until Christmas Day of 2002. So the 15th anniversary of that is right around the corner. And this, predictably, I would imagine, for people who've played that game, is Thundrana Drifts. You know, it's kind of became one of the most popular songs from that soundtrack, I feel like, in terms of people really seem to kind of be stuck in their memory and all that, and it kind of got sort of reprised in the weird ice section in Metroid Prime 3 and all that. So definitely one of the more memorable parts of the game when you first come into that area. And it was 15 years ago.
God, that's a long time.
I remember when we did the 15th anniversary of Super Metroid episode.
Oh God.
It's all designed to make you feel very old, but great music.
Missed accomplished. And,
a nice way to finish the year in music suggestions, I feel.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. We'll be back in the new year with plans for our We Are Retroactive. And John, Probably. I don't make promises. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.